good evening and welcome to the Could Have Been Champions on ABC Local Radio. Fabulous to have your company. That's our theme. We've had it for so long now, it just becomes as much a part of the furniture as you and I, Jeff Richardson.
Yes, hello there, Billy Baxter.
Hello, Ian Cover.
Good evening, Billy. Hello, Australia.
And Greg Champion.
Yes, good evening, Bill. Fabulous, as you mentioned, to be here. And for our Kiwi friends, it's fabulous.
Mm. Greg, there's a name to conjure, isn't it? Greg, it's short and sharp and punchy. It's almost an onomatopoeia.
Well, it's funny, some names you attach to certain occupations and stuff, and others you don't. You know, such as Billy Baxter sitting opposite me. It rolls off the tongue to say King Billy. Mm-hmm. And there was, you know, King William the Conqueror, and then there was King William the Orange. I mean, King William of Orange. But I don't remember...
King Billy the Koori, very famous.
And I don't remember King Greg.
No, there's been a Pope Greg, so that gets through to the scene.
There's been Pope Greg, but I don't remember a King Greg.
I don't remember a King
Ian. Not saying there hasn't been one.
No, I don't remember a King or a Queen Ian. But this, we have discussed this before, Jeff. We feel, don't we, that all names for little kitties should, if you can't put King or Queen before them, don't consider them. Right? Correct? Mm. That's a nice simple rule. So therefore, Queen Shanayla is not in.
Although, didn't Queen Shanayla have a number one hit last
year? You're thinking of Queen Latifah. Yes, Ian?
Now, gentlemen, can I put to you something very early in the piece tonight? And whilst we do have the nation's ears, they might have been able to give us some etiquette advice. Because we do find ourselves as Bob Dyer once said on the telly when he was quizzing Barry Jones.
Customers,
I find myself
in a dilemma.
We do have a bit of a dilemma. Long-time listeners to the program would be well aware of our broadcast from Port Fairy for a couple of years there. And on one of them, at Port Fairy, Mick proposed marriage to Kristen.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
How could we forget?
They have written saying you may not remember
us. Accepted.
Of course we do. We became engaged on your show last year, live at the Port Fairy Folk Festival. Mm. So we could... So we couldn't complete the guest list without some obvious inclusions. You guys who were there in the beginning. In planning our wedding, we have reflected often on that long weekend in March 2007. We'd love you to be able to share in the celebrations of our big day. And here it is. Kristen and Mick invite you to help celebrate their marriage. Could have been champions.
It's taken a while.
With an exclamation mark.
Yeah.
Beautiful card, too.
It's on a Saturday afternoon in November. Could we do an OB from the wedding, do you think?
What's the location? Will the budget stretch to?
It's in country Victoria.
Oh, it's easily. It ticks the box for going to our constituents
it's
in the country.
Lovely looking wedding invitation card. 4:30.
That's just right.
Yeah, then we could do the reception at...
We'll be chicker by 7.
When we go to wear it, 7 or 10. I mean,
with a skinful.
And the dress, though, this is, well, apart from working out whether we can go or not, the other problem is the dress code.
Yeah, what's it say?
Cocktail.
What does that mean, Ian? You're a man of the world.
Can someone help us?
Because,
yes. 1-300-800-222. 1-300-800-222. If you can define the dress code cocktail. Yes.
White
for
tie,
us.
Black tie, business attire.
Yeah.
Understand all of those.
Or formal.
Formal.
Dress formal, but
no
cocktail.
Shoes, no shirt, no service.
We understand all of those, but cocktail falls somewhere in the middle, I think.
1-300-800-222. We also need to know, we want to get in touch with Mick and Kristen to see whether Anthems of Oz are playing at the reception.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, I've heard of a cocktail dress.
Yes.
Not that I know what it is, but I have heard
but
of
for
one.
A gentleman, is it a smoking jacket and an open neck shirt, or cravat perhaps?
I know what it is.
What?
Gentlemen bring cocktail franks.
Cocktail.
It's a possibility.
I'm sure Australia can help us out on this one.
Yep.
And someone has.
Who?
Greg in Brisbane. Hello, Greg.
Hello, guys. How you doing?
Hello.
Very well, thanks.
Is that King Greg?
I hope my definition of cocktail is Walshy. Have you seen Walshy in his Hawaiian shirts?
And his Hawthorn socks.
The Hawaiian shirt is more lounging around the pool than the cocktail hour, isn't it?
Well, then you've got to have a cocktail with it, wouldn't you?
All right, now, Greg, we'll take that on advisement.
Yeah.
That's Hawaiian shirt. I'm still in a dilemma about what to.
What about a slack though, Greg? Yes.
A what?
A slack. What slack would you wear with a Hawaiian shirt? I only want to wear one pair, Ian.
Mm. Yeah. I don't know. That's Walshy.
Yeah. Mm. All right, Greg. Good on you, Greg. Hawaiian shirt on advisement. Mm.
I have a feeling that Val in Joondalup in Western Australia. Western Australia might be able to help. G'day, Val. Thanks for calling.
Oh, that's okay. My understanding of cocktail dress is, for the gentleman, that he wears a business suit with a tie, mm-hmm. white shirt, mm-hmm. and the ladies have to wear short evening dress.
Okay. Mm. So the indication cocktail is really more for the ladies?
More so, yes.
Okay, could you just expand on the kind of dress required, Val?
Something dressy, sort of... Taffeta.
Colourful, perhaps?
Not necessarily, no. It can be a little black dress.
Mm. An LBD would do the trick?
Yes.
Which doesn't help us. Val, you mentioned a white shirt. Must it be white or can it be a pastel?
I don't know, because in my day they didn't sort of have pastel like they have now, but I guess that's something very smart.
Val, if a lady turned up in a long dress, would that be a faux pas on a cocktail occasion?
Possibly.
Mm. Yes.
Yes, I think that's a bit overdressed.
Mm. Right, I'm thinking,
you
Val,
go to a ball in a long dress.
Yes, you don't want to turn up in a ball gown.
No.
It might be a bit more racewear. There's the sort of racewear they wear these days, don't they?
Probably.
So you have cocktails at the races.
So for gentlemen, business attire, but the shirt must be white, Val?
Well, I guess so. Yes. It certainly isn't a sport sort of shirt, checkered or anything like that.
Val, one thing I've noticed just in the last couple of weeks is gentlemen I've been encountering, they're wearing that. I thought David Frost's influence was long gone, but people were wearing the sort of darker toned shirt, but with the white cuffs and the white collar.
The Scacey.
The Scacey look. Would that be acceptable, Val?
I don't know. Mm. I guess if it went with the ladies, if she wore a black dress.
Mm. Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. If she wore a black short cocktail dress, then I guess it would be acceptable.
Could be quite smart.
Terrific, Val. If one of us comes up short for a date for this wedding, Andy's got your number. Expect a call. Cheerio.
Thank you.
Bye, Val.
You're very welcome. In Collie, Western Australia, Heather joins us. Hello, Heather.
Oh, hi. Yes, my understanding of cocktail dress is, for the men, for the gentlemen, is a lounge suit.
Oh, yeah, we're very good at lounging.
And what's your definition of lounge suit, Heather?
Yes.
Well, in my father's day, it would have been a safari suit.
Oh, really? Wow.
Now
got
you're
one of them.
Talking, Heather. So a safari suit would be okay.
Something sort of smart, but you know, not as dressed as a
business suit.
Wear, but I wouldn't have thought a business suit, because a business suit is really for business, for during the, you know, for going to work in.
And very dark.
So cocktail implies that you would get changed, having spent your day,
definitely.
In the
boardroom. Originally, it would go back to the Victorian or 1920s when they all changed for practically every meal and every function.
Yes.
Okay.
Heather, how do you feel about this contemporary trend of gentlemen wearing a smart suit with a nice shirt, but the shirt's not tucked in and there's no tie in evidence?
Sounds a bit sloppy to me.
And then they wear a dark-coloured suit and they have sort of very light-coloured shoes with them. Mm.
Oh, in one way that's going back to the 70s. Have you seen Life on Mars?
Yes, I have.
Seen Gene Hunt with his white shoes?
Yeah. That's sort of, when I look at that and I think, that could be cocktail, but you don't reckon it is, Heather?
Oh, no. Well, I mean, maybe in the trendies these days it is. Maybe I'm getting old, you know?
Right.
I would never say that, no, of course.
But you're ruling out the business suit.
I really think that's a bit too much like work.
Yeah, so rather than a navy blue pinstripe number, it might be a lighter colour, a grey or something.
Yeah. People used to have a range of suits in their wardrobes. They probably don't necessarily now.
No, they've got the multi. The one suit suits every occasion, I think, these days.
Yeah.
Given that it is November, the wedding, and it's in country Victoria where it could be a warm day.
I would actually trend towards a safari suit because, I mean, they're much better for the conditions, that's for sure. And
Heather, I've got one that actually, not only does it have the short sleeves, it actually has the short pant.
Yes.
And I'll wear it with the long socks.
Yes, and the pen in the sock. You have to have your pen in your sock.
The pen in the sock. Of course, but then you've got to decide whether you go the powder blue seersucker or beige.
Mine's powder blue.
I was thinking something of a mustard myself. That's very Don Dunstan, isn't it, Heather?
Anyway,
good on you, Heather.
Stay tuned. Stay tuned as the date for the wedding gets closed and we work out what we're going to do about attending that.
Well, all right. You've got your safari suit. You're off the dilemma, but we're still on it.
Well, anyway, there's the invitation to all of us, so we've got to work out whether we can get there and then what we wear.
Oh, we have to go.
We do. 1-300-800-222, seeking your advice. Can't really turn it down.
I needed to ask Heather or Val, is a jacket that doesn't match one's pants de rigueur?
Permissible.
For cocktail, well, perhaps another listener might fill us out on that.
And what if it was a blazer more so than a jacket?
Sports coat.
Was that considered cocktail?
That's what I like.
Some very smart jackets these days. You can team with a trouser.
We mentioned Don Dunstan. I don't know whether Don was ever frequenting Hyde Park, but certainly Rick is in Hyde Park and calling through now. Hello, Rick. Thanks for joining us.
G'day, boys.
Hi, Rick. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. I just came in late, but with regards to when something says lounge suit, the double-breasted suit should only be worn after 5 p.m.
So
where you have the business suit, you have to remove it and change it to a double-breasted suit for cocktail functions after 5 p.m., where it's not required to wear a black tie function.
Okay. These are rules that seem to have gone by the board these days.
Rick, that's
very
good. This is just helping us out here. So the safari suit or the double-breasted would see us comfortable.
You don't see that many double-breasted suits these days.
Well, you're about to.
So gentlemen should never wear a double-breasted suit during the daytime.
Rick, a big report in the paper yesterday said this season's fashions internationally will see the return of the double-breasted suit and that it would be worn in business
hours.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. Also, I saw in a paper in Adelaide yesterday that foppish is in for men this year.
Foppish?
Yes. Looking
well, we're in.
What does it mean?
Well, we'll have no trouble there.
What if the invitation had said dress? Foppish.
Foppish. That's a home fixture for us.
Looking forward to going to have a look at Bride's Head revisited just to get an update.
Good on you, Rick.
Thanks, Rick.
Thanks, boys.
Cheerio. Chris is in Perth. Good evening, Chris.
Guys, how are you going? I'm here to help you out with cocktail attire.
Oh, very good.
Good on you.
Yeah. I've never heard of a safari suit myself, and I don't want to hear what it is because it sounds a bit off for my colour, mate.
Wouldn't have made it to Perth.
Yeah, no, probably not, to be honest. Yeah. cocktail attire in my mind is no suits, actually, guys. I'd be going, stay away from your blacks and whites. Pastel colours are good, or you definitely wear a smart sort of collared buttoned-up shirt.
Yes.
Tucked into some nice sort of suit pants, probably either something pinstripe or a grey pant.
Yes.
And whatever you do, you want to match your belt with your shoes. So you're more than welcome to wear like tan shoes and wear them with like a tan belt, something like that.
Okay. Now, Chris, the neckwear.
The neckwear?
No tie.
So you sort of have the top button undone.
Not even a cravat?
No need for cravat. Basically what they're trying to say is it's sort of a nice way of saying
relax.
Smart casual, but one up from jeans, you know what I mean?
Yeah, good call. I'm tipping, given the time of the day and the location, that there will be a lot of the open neck shirts.
Yeah, especially coming into summer. I think it's definitely their way of saying we don't expect you to come in a suit and tie, but we do expect you to sort of wear nice pants, nice shirt, tucked in with some nice shoes.
That's very useful, Chris. Now, so you reckon that's a nice way of saying no jeans without saying no jeans.
Exactly.
What about would a lightweight moleskin be acceptable?
Lightweight moleskin. I would say so.
Oh, and I think also that, as I say, it's in rural Victoria, so that would just probably be de rigueur.
And Chris, I can tell by the tone of your voice that you're quite masculine, and I'm sure that that unbuttoned shirt would be unbuttoned to just above the navel for you.
I was just about to say, you could even do the second button as well if you want a guy with a nice necklace or something as well.
Chris, coming from Perth, you have a gold chain with a little cricket bat on it like Dennis Lilly.
Yeah, I've actually got the dog tag myself.
Oh, there you go. Good on you, Chris.
We can all aspire to DK any day.
Exactly.
Happy travels.
Thanks, Chris.
Good, Chris.
Good on you. On the Gold Coast, we talked to Philip. Hello, Philip. Thanks for joining us.
G'day, guys.
Good.
In these modern days of everything celebrity, you can't go past Brian Brown and Tom Cruise in Cocktail and their attire.
Have a look at the movie.
Wasn't Brian Brown just behind the jump in basically a Hawaiian shirt mixing up his drinks?
Well, that sounds about perfect, really.
From what I can remember, falling asleep during it on a plane once.
Well, the invitation does say Cocktail, doesn't it, Philip?
Yeah, that might mean dressed like the movie Cocktail, because sometimes your kids have posed as dress, you know, Superman.
Well, I can go as Tom Cruise. I'm about the right height.
Hey, Philip.
Well, and bring your own as well, you know. Yes. They probably expect you to bring a six-pack.
Philip, have you been down watching the Indy 300 today?
I'm a cab driver. I am up to my neck in it.
No, I was just a bit concerned. I had a feeling for a long time it had been the Indy 500. Has the worldwide recession hit the Indy 500 and now it's just 300?
No, that's just the exchange rate.
Well, Philip, you might get the big one on a day like this when the Indy's on at the Gold Coast. You just want a bunch of blokes to jump in the back and say, take us to Cairns, mate.
Yeah, as long as I'm back by 3 in the morning, the boss will be happy. Yeah,
very good.
Good on you, Philip.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, good on you. Have a great night. Jared's in Port Ferry, where all this started. G'day, Jared.
Yeah, g'day, guys. How are you going? I'm actually just picking my daughter up. I've come across from Koroit. Port Ferry, looking around Norfolk Pines, the beach, everything like that. It's laid back, so I just say you dress very, very informally and casually. I'm looking at all the Toros here at the minute. There's nothing fancy about it here. It's just a relaxed atmosphere.
Oh, yeah, but Jared, see, Port Ferry was where the engagement took place. The wedding's actually going to be in central Victoria.
Oh, okay, so you've got a bit of travel to do then.
Yes, and we've got to be right on the money here with how we attire ourselves. I'd love to take up your suggestion and go the beach look.
Yeah, we might get on to Christian and Mick and say, look, I know it's late in the day, but can you move the wedding to Port Ferry?
Well, I was just going to suggest that you have something floral, a pair of old Hokanuis or something.
The Hokanuis, just to go.
Hokanuis with a bit of rope for a belt.
That's it.
Magnificent.
Magnificent.
Maybe a weddy.
You'll work it out anyway.
A pair of fisherman's pants and a wetsuit top.
That's it.
Good on you, Jared.
Good luck.
Good night. Jeff's in Yarraville. Hello, Jeff.
How are you?
Very well, thanks.
I think you're all going a bit down market. I was thinking of James Bond when you said Cocktail.
That's a very good point. If ever there was a man who could consume a cocktail, he's the one.
He knew how to dress for the Cocktail Hour.
Yeah, those white jackets and flower in a buttonhole.
Exactly. I'm thinking of when he went to the Mardi Gras in Thunderball.
Yes.
Remember when he emerged out of the water in his wetsuit, unzipped the wetty, and underneath the wetsuit he had cocktail attire.
And he generally did very well for himself too.
Yes. At the tables, you mean?
Yeah.
Good on you, Jeff.
That's very good, Jeff.
Cheerio. We travel down to northeast Tasmania.
Oh, hello.
And have a chat to John. Whereabouts in northeast Tassie, John?
Near Tomahawk.
That's St Helens Way, isn't it?
No. It's along the coast, a bit further northeast than Bridport.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this thing with the cocktail parties, I can remember my father being a young married man in 1932 telling me about how cocktail parties became all the fashion because nobody, but absolutely nobody, had any cash. You know, it just wasn't around. So most people hang around in groups of about six married couples, and it's still true today, I think. But anyhow, what they did was they had these cocktail parties that where you arrived promptly at 5:30 on a Friday evening and left promptly at 7:30. And in most cases, there would be, say, one couple asked to stay for a meal. Mm-hmm. They were only allowed, as they went round the circuit, to put on either sweet or dry sherry. Mm-hmm. And each woman that came to the evening brought a plate. In those days, so my father told me, a bottle of sherry cost 1 and 3p. So you needed 6 of those,
yeah,
and maybe 1 for reserve. And he said they came basically dressed in what they'd worn during the day, because they had to arrive promptly at 5:30. The men would be mostly in suits, and the women were in a sort of, in those days, it was a sort of knee-length, just below the knee sort of dress.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he said you could get everybody as high as a kite for 9p.
Those were the days, John.
I bet Kristen and Mick wish their wedding was going to be 9p head.
Yeah, but in my experience, when I was a young married bloke in the early 1960s, everything changed quite drastically. Everybody arrived late.
Mm.
They stayed far too long.
Mm.
They expected to get all the best booze in the world.
Mm.
And the things very quickly fell out of favour.
And they only left once it was all gone.
Yeah. And generally made a mess about the place.
Perhaps the whole world went downhill in the 60s, well, John, and hasn't come back.
Instead of going along for a little brief cocktail party, they decided having things like Woodstock and going for 4 days.
That's right. I blame Timothy Leary.
Yes.
And one of my aunts, who was one of these young married people in this group,
said,
we all had no money, but we had such a gay time. Mm. Isn't it terrible what they've done to that word?
Correct. Yeah. Couldn't agree more.
And not only that, too.
Good on you, John.
Okay.
Lovely to hear from you.
Yeah, good work. Now, gents, we've had a range of interesting illuminations on just exactly what cocktail dress should be for a gentleman. But we actually should go to the source and refer to the bride-to-be. And Kristen joins us on the line now. Hey, Kristen.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Oh, we're very good. Well, good to hear from you. Thanks for inviting us.
It wouldn't be... there's no show without punch, I suppose.
That's right.
Well, it's lovely to have you on the Could Have Been Champions again on ABC Local Radio.
But we're very confused.
Mm.
We don't know what to wear. What is lounge attire for gentlemen?
Cocktail
attire.
I guess starting with the groom, we've had a hard enough time trying to get Mick into a suit at all. So we thought he can't do with the old Levi's, so we thought we'd better say cocktail. He will be wearing a shirt and jacket, no tie. So I guess just something casual.
Mm-hmm.
Really? Oh.
Something casual. Why didn't you put something casual?
Yeah, they would have worn jeans.
Just to confuse you. That's right. Yep.
Cocktail just does lift the bar a little bit.
Yeah.
That's right.
And Kristen, is it a stand-around affair or are we sitting down?
There will be tables, but yes, it is a stand-around affair.
Outdoors?
Yes, it is.
Right. Well, that's, I think you can get around without a tie in the outdoors, walking around the garden.
Mm. I think so.
I might wear a shirt and have a sweater tied in a knot at my neck.
That would be delightful.
And could you give us an insight into what you're wearing, or is it top secret, Kristen?
No, it's not top secret. Just I'm having a dress made, and yeah, that's just the normal the bridal gown sort of get up. So
good for you, Kristen. And the bride will be wearing a dress.
Yeah. That's right.
And will you have a team of security people with large black umbrellas shielding you as you get out of the car and make your way to the...
There'll be a tent over the top of me.
Yeah, righto.
And which major magazine have you done the deal with?
The local Bendigo Addy.
Oh, there you go.
So it's all going well?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, it's all the plans are falling into place, so... Yeah, 4 weeks now, so we haven't had an RSVP from you boys. But
we're discussing it with the nation tonight.
So I've heard.
Kristen, I was at a country race meeting yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and I think this is quite often de rigueur at this time of the year. There was one little tent on the course which had a name on it. It was, Kristen's Hen's Day, and the bride-to-be was getting around with the veil on her head and all the other girls. So are you having a day out at a race meeting like that prior to...
I actually had my... there are a lot of race meets around at the moment, but I had my hen's night last Saturday night, and my bridesmaids hired the local tram here in Bendigo, and I don't know if you remember what Mick looked like, but the bald head and goatee and moustache, and everyone had to dress up like him. So it was quite an eventful evening where everyone sort of thought, Mick Darcy's invaded Bendigo.
A tram load of Mick's.
That's right. That's right.
Terrific.
And has he had the bucks turn yet?
He hasn't, no. His best man's actually here at the moment discussing plans.
Oh, so just tell him to give us a call and we'll work something out.
No worries.
In fact, we could broadcast live from Buxton. That'd be a first for Australian radio.
I think there might be some censorship issues there.
I'm tipping the dress will be something casual at the Buxton.
Yeah, we have to go and get delay. Thanks, Kristen.
Yeah. You're very welcome.
We will RSVP. We're just trying to organise with young Andy, our producer, just how we can get the ABC radio big recording bus up there so we can broadcast it around the world on the World Wide Web.
Oh, there's plenty of room for an OB out there.
Yeah. Excellent.
Like the Saturday soiree, a cocktail hour wedding is a soiree of the highest order. Yes. Yes.
Kirsten, thanks again for inviting us.
No worries.
That's terrific.
All right.
And say good day to Mick.
I will do.
All righty. Cheerio.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye. That's all right.
Thank you, Kristen.
So just turn up like unmade beds. I like that. Gavin's in a very mysterious-sounding place in Western Australia called Secret Harbour. Hi, Gavin.
G'day, boys. How you going?
Good.
Well. How secret's the Secret Harbour?
Oh, just keep it quiet. Don't tell too many people.
Righto.
I was thinking about suave and smooth operators. How about going the Andrew Demetrio Brownlow look?
The only trouble is they might announce the divorce before they actually say they're married.
I was just thinking that myself. He could get up there and do a speech and just announce the bridesmaids instead of the bride and get it all around the wrong way for us.
Exactly. That'd be very funny.
It'd be memorable.
We could go another Brownlow route and turn up in a brown velvet suit a la Graham Teasdale.
That'd be classy, wouldn't it?
Very much so. Good on you, Gavin.
See you, boys.
Bye, Gav.
Keep the harbour a secret.
No, we won't tell anyone.
No. Charlie's in store. Hi, Charlie.
There you go, fellas.
Good, Charlie.
You fellas have kept me entertained for a lot of years, you know, on a Sunday evening.
Good on you. Thank you.
Now I get a chance to talk to you.
Good on you.
Yeah, what about this cocktail suit idea?
Me,
I'm an Australian bloke, you know.
Yes.
And it's what you feel comfortable in.
Good
long, longish, you know, down to the halfway between the knees and your thighs, shorts and long socks with pen in, just in case you need to make a note about something.
Yep.
And a pair of sandals.
Yes.
And a nice looking, you know, rugby top or a polo
top.
How
about a Terraline shirt?
Yeah, Terraline shirt is all right too.
Or bride nylon.
Short sleeve.
If you're nice and slim like I used to be about 30 or 40 years ago, a body shirt would go well.
Hey, bring back the polyester body shirt.
It sounds very much like...
Yeah, that'd be a great idea, wouldn't it?
It's territory rig, isn't it?
The polyester short sleeve business shirt was much favoured by members of police forces right around the country.
Yeah, it made them look different to what they were in the uniform.
Charlie, I think you've just about nailed it there.
I reckon I should have, yeah.
Charlie, I think the polyester body shirt still got a place on the larger man.
I was a 6 foot two, and now I'm 60-something and starting to shrink, I think.
Well, the shirt... the polyester body shirt shouldn't be worn on days when the temperature is under 30 degrees.
That's right, yeah, they're too
light.
Got
to sweat up the arms in it, don't
you? Yeah, too light, yeah.
Good on you, Charlie.
Okay.
Don't leave it so long before you contact us again.
No, I won't.
Good to talk to you.
Good on you, Charlie.
Right. Good on you, Charlie.
Well, there you go.
Well, there, we've got an idea, gents.
Oh, that's been a bit of fun.
A range of sartorial fashion for us.
That's given us all something to go along, haven't we?
Yeah.
I had a reference earlier in the discussion to light-coloured shoes.
Yeah.
And I attended a suburban function recently.
They would have been everywhere.
Every young man in the room had the light-coloured shoes with the square toe
and
the flat
top. Yeah.
A flat shoe, you know, they're very squashy shoe.
And a loafer too, your slip-on, as opposed to your lace-up.
Yes, still a look I'm getting used to.
You won't be able to get on with bookmakers about Flemington Week, how many pairs there will be out there.
The light-coloured shoe.
They'll be everywhere.
It's in, but I don't know why. What does SMS stand for?
Never had any idea.
There you go. There's a mystery for you.
Secret messaging service.
Yes. Yes.
Something like that. Someone will be able to tell
us. Producer Andrew,
short message service.
Our producer Andy, who is a young person, uses these things. He says it stands for short message service.
Does it?
So when someone says to you, "Send me an SMS,"
they're
not making any sense, are they?
I see why.
It should be just send me an SM.
Well, I see why.
Or send me a short message.
Well, the reason I ask the question is because I heard Walshy on ABC Radio Grandstand yesterday.
You love listening to Walshy.
I do. Inviting people to send their SMSs. And SMS being three syllables and being a fan of brevity in speech where possible, I don't know why SMS is still in use where text would do.
Maybe they're two different things.
Well, when you text someone...
But you use text to send your short message, don't you?
Yeah.
I don't know. One thing I've noticed is there's a huge proportion of the population who actually believes that this message is a text.
Next point. When you text someone...
When you text someone.
Yeah.
Don't forget to text me.
That's right. Or no, in the past tense is the feature. I text... That she texted me, and she said,
"That's right, T-E-X-E-D."
Because it sounds,
and then I messaged you back.
Because it sounds past tense.
Text him.
Which also puts me in mind of another word that the younger folk haven't quite got a handle on. So they mispronounce at the start within the first place, and then they might give it a past tense by adding an ed or a d, and that is. Who are we versing on Saturday?
Ah. That one's really grown, hasn't it? In the last two or 3 years, versing has become a verb.
Well, it should be versusing.
How did you go against, Smith's Gully?
Oh, we were versing the top side. We didn't have a chance.
No, we haven't versed them yet.
Yeah, that's just come out of nowhere and really spread, isn't it? Although, don't get overconfident on this one, panel, and listeners who may be jumping onto the phone wanting to chortle over people's incorrect use of versing as a verb. What does versus actually mean?
It's Latin for against.
Thank you. Thank you, Alter Boy.
Is that right?
Thank you, Pulteney Scholar.
Yeah.
It may be the last Latin word in use, and it's now gone.
We were the last Latin class. As I went through to matric, Latin went. After I left, Latin
so you was were gone. Like you were like Caesar's Praetorian Guard. Once the last man fell, that was the empire was finished.
Yeah, but I think in more recent times, Latin may have made a comeback in schools.
So, do you think that
to some extent?
I'm wondering I'm wondering whether all the wonderful folk who made their way out to the Olympic Stadium for the NRL Grand Final when Melbourne Storm. And when the Melbourne Manly Warringah Seagulls were playing the grand final, but all the well-educated folk of the NRL world realised that there was a Latin word involved in the occasion for when they versus each other.
Yeah, or just the V dot abbreviation. And all it means, Greg, is?
Against.
So, seeing as you're such a proponent of brevity...
So,
what's wrong with good old against?
From now on, when the fixtures are published for next season, can they just put Melbourne Storm against Manly?
I tell you what's wrong with it, Jeffy. Versus gets abbreviated to VS, and so it prints up nicely. But when you have to say it, you can't. You don't say this.
Do you abbreviate it to VS or just V?
Well,
just V dot.
When it's printed, so but against doesn't have a known abbreviation that we're aware of.
AGST dot.
I'm sure it does, but V is shorter.
Anyway.
That's probably why it gets used. But
there you go.
I do love the fact that text doesn't have a past participle.
And can you only do the texting on the SMSing on a phone? What about when these younger folks sit down at computers and write little short messages to each other?
Always thought that was SMSing.
What's that one, Andy? He's the young person.
He's sending an email, isn't it?
Or is that MSN?
There's a different...
It's MSN.
That's MSMing.
MSNing, I think.
No, M.
M, is it?
I tell you, it's MS Lemming.
If you want to stick with this, you go to the streaming thingy. However that works, but...
It's easy to...
We will be here.
MSMs.
Hello, Perry. Perry's announcing it's time for Magic Moments, and who better to lead off with his Magic Moment than Gregory Kent champion, Pulteney Scholar.
This is just newspaper clippings this week, gentlemen.
That's all right.
That's all right.
Okay.
Update advice, all states will be leaving us shortly.
Yes. Fingers on the button. So, here we go.
Yep.
Here we go. I'm looking for four words. It shouldn't be hard. from the international soccer game between Qatar and Australia. And Qatar misses a golden opportunity to get a late one back, and that just about
Sums it all up?
Sums up
their night.
Their night. Sums up their evening. So, yeah, sums right up on their day.
Right on, yep.
There
yep
is a lot of, and that just about
that sums it up. Or sums it up, yeah. Sums yeah up their, or their day, yep.
Their day. That, you know, when they've had a shocker and they have another, something goes wrong towards the end.
Let's just have another look at that shot for goal that Cameron Mooney had just before the teams went off at half-time in the grand final. By the end of the day, that pretty well summed it up for the Cats.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I wasn't going to mention turning to my companion a little bit later in the afternoon, earlier in the last quarter, and say, well, if they can't kick one like that,
that just about that sums up, it up their day.
That sums up their day.
There we go.
Thank you, Greggy.
All right, find the verb here. It shouldn't be too hard. This is a headline from the papers. Home sales blank to new low. Yes?
Plummeted.
Yes, it's plummeted. Well done.
It's going to go plunge, but no, that's going a bit plummet bigger.
You're away to a flyer, Ian. All right, fill in the verb from the headline. From today's...
Versus?
It's not a verb. It's not a verb. From today's paper.
Oh.
Fired up dragons blank the Taipans.
What does fired up mean?
Fired up. Not fired up.
He's from Adelaide.
Fired up.
Just, hang on.
Just my eye so sounds getting a little bit eye.
This is the basketball last night, is that right? Now but, because the Taipans are a snake, is there some kind of animal handling word we're looking for here?
You're on the sniff.
Give us a sense again. The dragons, what do they do?
Fired up.
Fired up dragon.
Not fired up, but fired up.
So this is the battle of the mythical creature versus the Australian snake. You're on the sniff.
You're on the track. So fired up dragons. They've had a big win.
Have
blanked the Taipans. I would not be looking for the Taipan type verb. I'd be looking for a dragon type verb.
They've scorched them?
No, but now you're in the...
Smote them?
Oh, what do dragons do?
Breathe fire.
Yeah, but no, if they do one verb, they... actually,
they frighten people.
Gobble them up.
Actually, I'm wrong because dragons get by St. George.
Yeah, he skewers them.
What verb did St. George?
Smote?
He slayed.
Oh, so the dragon slayed the Taipan.
Slayed the top. But now that you think, now that you pointed it out,
it should be the other way around.
So their snakeness really didn't.
I would have gone with smote. Yeah.
I
like smoten.
Yeah, finally,
I'm smitten with smoten.
We haven't smote them this year yet.
Yeah, and it's a bit long to say fired up dragons, chop head off Taipans and nail them to a fence post till sunset.
So
someone ordered that. It's got a very colourful.
Find the adjective.
Oh, really?
Yes.
An adjective is a describing word.
At Stumps on day two, the Redbacks were 1-for-110, still 363 behind the Bush Rangers. What innings total of 6-for-473 declared?
Smote.
First innings total.
Yes, yes, yes.
Redbacks, stinging.
Now we're looking for the
poison.
Bush. Okay, I'll give
toilet
it to you.
Toilet seat.
Oh, you're looking for a description of the first thing itself. Is it a mammoth?
Now you're getting into
the gargantuan.
We've got spiders and mammoths.
Now you're getting a little bit sensible about it.
Yeah.
Right, I'll give it to you again. That's right, we're looking for a description of the first...
Yeah, don't worry about the names.
At Stumps on day two, the Redbacks were 1-for-110, still 363 behind the Bush Rangers' blank first innings total of 6-for-470.
Gargantuan.
Well, that's in the area.
Impressive.
That's very close. If it's not impressive...
What's
it
start with? Imposing?
Improbable.
Imposing is right.
That's right. A lot of cricket scores are imposing totals.
Thank you.
That's a very good to set out early in the season.
There we go.
I always forget about the imposing.
Yeah, very good cricket.
Ian and Jeff, do you care to share a magic moment?
Gee.
In this ever-changing world in which
we live. Do you want to go, Richo?
Look, I had one of those odd little things happen to me this week. It wasn't an encounter with greatness. It was an encounter with artefacts, and you don't expect it, but there they are, and you see something that gets talked about a lot, and you might see pictures of it in the paper or on the telly, but you don't think of it as being a real thing that you could actually touch or pick up. And I was at a function where they had on display, and not under glass or anything, but right there you could walk up and feel the heft of it. the actual fared income WS Cox plate.
Oh, really?
Really?
And sitting right next to it, the actual fared income VARs for the race run the same distance. Mm. And all my life I've heard people talk about the Cox plate and the WS Cox plate, and you know that it's a plate and all of this sort of stuff. And there it was, and I held it in my hands.
Mm. So, did you try and knock it off, put it in the duffel bag?
One presumes was it silver as opposed to ceramic or something, is it?
It's metal. Now, whether it's silver or pewter or silver, I don't know, but it's you, when you hold it, it's a serious trophy. You know? You feel a bit like King Arthur having pulled the sword out of the stone. It's got a vibe to it.
Mm.
And I realise now that the vase, which I sort of have sneered at in the past, it's now been going around for, nearly 20 years?
Mm.
It's a serious thing too, this cut crystal vase with a little lid on it. It's like something from the round table as well. You can imagine King Arthur and the knight sitting around and just having a sip out of the vase.
Imagine it turning up on Antiques Roadshow
for
evaluation.
Oh, and in Lovejoy.
Yeah, yeah. Lovejoy would find it.
It's interesting, isn't it, amongst the plethora of cups that there are around the world. It's nice to think there's a plate and a vase among
them. That's right. There's a million of these different trophies in the world of all these different things that you win, but some of them have got a special oomph about them. The Melbourne Cup's one. AFL Premiership Cup is another. These two objects, definitely, whatever it is, they had it.
Well, I think it's good if they're useful, though, around the home. Yes. a bread ball would be good.
For fruit. Put your fruit in it on the sideboard.
If you want to get your hands around something and just see how impressive it is, see if you can lift up the Sheffield Shield.
Yeah. Now, there's another one, and isn't it good to see it back?
Oh, it's all been in name, and it's also, it was covered in some sort of blue velvet for a long time, but it's all been restored, and I think it's on display at the Sacker.
Well, of course it would be, because, you know, it's the home of cricket.
No, I think Ian McLaughlin might have had something to do with it being restored or whatever at the Sacker. I have some friends who play an annual golf day, and they play for a vase.
Mm-hmm.
And they did have the vase actually as the trophy that they played for, and it was made out of some type of material, alabaster.
Yes.
And it was sitting on top of
alabaster used to feature a lot as the material of the prizes won on Lady for a Day.
It's my auntie, by the way. Auntie Ella.
The alabaster.
Mm.
And the winner one year had it sitting on top of a power box in his shop, and a lightning struck a tree outside the shop.
Yeah.
The lightning ran down the tree along the ground and, you know, obviously found a power source. Mm. So then it ran back up into the power box that the vase was sitting on top of. It vibrated and the vase hit the floor. The man went out the shop to see the tree he could hit, came back in. The vase was in a million pieces on the floor because the alabaster
all shattered.
But the organisers have got two or three of the larger pieces of the vase and have had them set in an acrylic cube.
Oh, isn't that great?
Yeah.
That's fabulous.
Yeah, and when the vase that had been painted gold, when it was actually set in the acrylic resin, the acrylic resin reacted with the gold paint on the vase, so it's now got this really antique green look.
It looks Florentine.
Something from the Bronze Age.
Oh, that's magnificent.
Yeah. Was this a vase that was won and is a perpetual trophy? Yeah. So all of a sudden the trophy has changed shape and colour.
It weighs a tonne because it's in the acrylic block.
But it is the original materials.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. If they'd gone for the modern ceramics that, you know, are used in, you know, modern scientific applications, that wouldn't have happened when the lightning struck. I was at a demonstration once. They were showing this is our modern ceramic thing and we're going to use them in industrial processes. They never break.
Mm.
And everyone's going, it just looks like a ceramic bowl to me. Bloke opens the window. We're about five stories up. Looks down at the car park. Chucked it out. Mm. As you can see, bang, down below. We all went downstairs. There's a crater in the concrete. The ceramic bowl is sitting there without a mark on it. That's what you need for your golf trophy.
Just quickly on the Cox plate, I once visited Gay Waterhouse's offices in a little house in Randwick near her stables that you were talking about the other week. And I thought that's a very impressive looking bowl on the table there when we're having Sunday morning nibbles and a glass of bubbly.
Hmm.
Looked more closely, it was a Cox plate.
Oh,
there you go. We unfortunately have to say goodbye to our live audience, but you can continue streaming on the World Wide Web. We look forward to you And you are with the Could Have Been Champions, and we are on the web now. We've gone through the magic door that was the wireless, and we're now on the web.
We'll just pause for a moment here while you just boot up your computer.
Adjust your headsets.
Have you missed anything? We haven't said much. We've been waiting for you to...
No, some updates kicked in. They have to wait till it's updated now, and then they have to reboot after the update.
We've stepped through the door, and we're now inside the internet. Look around.
Gee, big in here, isn't it?
Some of us will have been on the net.
Hello!
What's that rabbit over there wearing the top hat doing?
Let's follow it.
We're in here because there was a sporting commitment that was... we had about 2 minutes' notice of.
An Aussie, oi, oi, oi number. Just on the matter, we're discussing the Cox Plate, in case you've... Remember that bit you were listening to live on the radio? We're keeping it going on the web. Yeah, I was at Gay's little cottage near the stables.
Which animal won it for her, do you remember?
That's a good... No, I think it might have been won by her father, Tommy.
Oh, it was one of Tommy's.
Yeah. Because, and the house is...
I didn't think she'd won one.
No, I think it was one of Tommy's. And I remember sitting on the couch and looking at a screen showing some highlights of races featuring horses that Gay trains. And you'll note at no stage have I used her surname too. And I don't even need to.
No.
And wouldn't it have been marvellous if Yana had walked in? Anyway.
With Ray.
Actually, I got home last Sunday night from the program here and turned on ABC One on the telly, and the Andrew Ollie media lecture was coming to a conclusion, and making the lecturer was Ray.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Ray, if you're listening, because I reckon you might stream and have a listen to us, he was using those Perspex auto-cue things they have.
Oh, the ones like Barack Obama uses?
Yeah, those Perspex paddles they've had on the side. Because I thought, gee, Ray's working well. He's looking to the left. He's looking to the right. He's finished a sentence. He's done another one over here, a little short one, a bit about that. And then he did this and then went straight down the lens and smiled, then went back to the left. And then I realised he was looking at the paddles. I thought, Ray doesn't need them after all these years, does he?
He'd probably commit to memory, wouldn't he?
He probably doesn't need them, but the point is he's in touch with the latest stuff.
Yeah. Well, then the vote of thanks was proposed by the ABC Managing Director, Mark Scott.
I know Mark's dreams.
Well, and Mark was doing some of his best work. If we could get a copy of Mark's response, it was very funny. Because Ray had been lamenting. I know I've digressed for a minute, but Ray was lamenting that, the standard of journalism on commercial television had, slipped somewhat because they don't have the moguls anymore driving it, who believed in journalism.
That was reported as the thrust of his theme of his speech.
I'm glad you used the word thrust, too. It was more than just a theme, Greg. It was a thrust. And Mark Scott, the manager at the ABC, in responding and proposing the vote of thanks to Ray, had a touch of the HGs, or the Roy. So he said that if you've got a mogul running the station, he can make decisions quickly and put things into play very quickly. And he said Ray might have forgotten he started at the ABC, and of course, at the ABC, if we're going to have the same approach that Ray's espousing that happens on commercial television, we'd probably have to form a committee and make sure there was at least one staff representative on that committee. They would then make recommendations to me. And by the end of the year, I should have a decision. So I thought Mark's self-deprecating style of humour was most welcome and warm.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed every bit of it. Mark, Mr. Scott, sir. So now I'm over at Gay's, and I'm sitting there watching the telly, watching some horses go around. I looked down on the coffee table in front of me because I had a little glass of bubbly that Gay had handed out on this particular Sunday morning. I thought, I might just, reach over and grab one of the little nibblies out of the plate on the table, and I realised it was a W.S. Cox plate. Then I looked over on the sideboard over there. You know what was sitting over there on the sideboard just across from the coffee table?
A Melbourne Cup?
No, a golden slipper. And it really is a golden slipper, like a shoe. That. Yeah, like the Cinderella type thing.
Well, if you get two, can you wear them?
I've got to say, a plate or a vase, as Billy says, has a lot more practical applications than a golden slipper on its own.
We spoke to Sheila Laxon on the program last night on the Saturday Soiree. Sheila would have a bit of silverware and glassware around her digs up there in Seymour. She's got a Caulfield cup.
And a Melbourne Cup.
And a Melbourne Cup as well, but you have plates and slippers.
Every chance.
What happens when they just name a race after some knucklehead? Like there's...
You win a knucklehead.
Yeah.
No, I don't know.
But, you know, they're naming one after Chris Isaac. So do they give one of his guitars as the prize?
He might rip one of the old gold records off his wall at home and bring it out to hand over. Mm. Oh, there'd be a trophy of some description, Billy, and I think his name would just be on the inscription which is not the same.
Not the same.
It's not the same.
But nor should it be the same. This is what makes those feature races distinctive.
Mm, it does. You're quite right.
I live in a house that I'm very fond of,
mm-hmm.
and it's got... it harks back to the late 50s, early 60s. It used to be a beach house. It's been renovated, but it still has the original floor-to-ceiling window systems, quite a lot of glass there. Not a skillion roof, but just a very slight pitched roof. And it's got angles and flutes off it. The house gets quite hot. We've got an air conditioner, but you don't like to use an air conditioner if you don't have to. And we've suffered through about four summers on the occasion when it's very hot. The house heats up quickly, regardless of if you draw the blinds and let the air flow through.
That would be irregardless of if you draw the blinds.
What did I say?
Regardless, which is correct, but we would rather use the incorrect.
I understand. Irregardless. All right, irregardless.
Mm.
During the week, found a solution, and it was as simple as painting the roof white.
Reflective white.
Right. With end product that has some minerals and chemicals in it, just ore-based ones that kick the sun off there. And when was it? Yesterday was quite an hot day.
Mm.
Generally, you couldn't, you know, touch the roof. It's just a corrugated iron roof, not tinted or anything like that. But you could put your hand on it, and it was this. If you know, it was like you had a hand on the fridge.
But how was it inside the house, though?
Remarkably cool, Ian.
You noticed a difference in the temperature?
Immediately. I had to call for my
sweater?
Jumper. Mm.
So this is a specially designed roof painting product?
Yeah. Of course, I can't mention the brand name.
No. I didn't know such a thing existed. Isn't it fantastic? Yeah.
Why isn't that being promoted as something that people can do to cool their houses?
Well, apparently it's a very big product up there in that Queensland you got down there, and also in the Western Australia, and apparently in South Australia as well. It's quite highly regarded and used by roof restorers generally.
Well, they're the advanced thinking states of our nation.
So if you do that, you might then need to have an air conditioner, and then you could save on greenhouse gas emissions. Is that how it works?
You would clearly be reducing the hole in the ozone layer. Air conditioning. Yeah.
That's right. I had to put a primer on and then two coats.
Did you do it yourself?
I started to do it myself.
And then?
Mm-hmm. 15 minutes in.
It's a very big roof.
Got the man.
Yeah.
I got Robbie, the roof restorer.
And what the roof iron, the roof stuff, aluminium corrugated, what
just kind? Just corrugated.
Mm-hmm. Iron or aluminium?
Iron.
Iron, yeah. Because different metals will... So it need to be primed in different ways, obviously.
So your existing roof, before you put this treatment on it, was just your silver gal iron look.
Yeah, untreated, not your zinc aluminium.
And now it's white now?
It's white,
It's a bit glary for the aeroplanes?
You don't really see it from, I don't care what it looks like to anyone else, because I don't have to look at it.
Mm.
Yeah, so someone looking down from a balloon.
Yeah. Right. So how many coats of primer?
One coats of primer.
And then the top coat?
Two coats of top coat, but it was... It got it done in one because Robbie, the roof restorer, laid it on thick.
Did he put a safety rail up around the edge of the roof and everything, or have you?
Well, Robbie's been in the business a very long time, and I'm sure he's got a handle on how to operate as best to suit his needs.
So, in other words, you've contravened OH&S.
Well, I did when I jumped up there to do the 15 minutes of
primer.
But you had to clean the roof properly, and I did a scrappy job and then thought, well, this is ridiculous. It's going to peel off in, you know, a year if I do it. Yeah. So he got up there with his high-pressure gurney.
Yeah.
Tremendous, Billy. So this house you've got, it's got a water tank down the side, it's got a painted roof,
and it's got a fox.
Yeah. And the moral of the story and the lesson I've learned from all this, don't bother doing it yourself.
Yeah, get the man every time.
So throw money at it as my old man.
Reasonable price?
Given that it is a lifetime guarantee, it was the material cost $800.
Sure. Yeah. for the paint.
It was about 135 square metres.
I know a bloke at the northern suburbs could get it for you for half that.
Yes.
You got to meet him in the car park.
At midnight.
Yeah.
So that was good. That was a nice thing that happened. That was magical.
Especially
then,
the magic of actually seeing it work by to touch.
Exactly.
Just feeling the dramatic effects.
And now when I read 35 in the paper, I'm not going to go, oh, jeez. It'll just roll off my back like sunshine off a... Joanna's back.
The magic is that you're inside and you can feel it instantly after the job's done. Mm-hmm. You notice the change just like that.
That's right.
Because it's, you know, a lot of products make a lot of claims and suddenly one really worked.
Mm. Yes. And that's
outrageous.
Yeah.
Some Australian.
I have to get onto that. Yeah.
And today...
I was much preferring that you're going to say it's not working and I expect there to be a battle between the 6:30 current affairs programs that come down and expose this product.
Get the story. Mm. Today I came to work and locked my keys in the car.
Oh, no.
I never do that, but I did it today.
Where was Ronnie today? Getting the keys out, was he?
No, this was here at the factory.
Did you get the man in again?
Well, it's a story that I'm about to tell.
Mm-hmm.
Rocked up here, keys are locked in. Mm. In the street I found a piece of...
coat hanger?
Brick.
Yeah. And fiddled around there with coat hanger and a chap, a colleague here who I'd not met before... But he's Dale from Ripon Lee.
Good on you, Dale.
He was here adjusting a set that will be used on a new television show, which will be on the morning.
Can't say too much.
No, can't say too much. So he was very helpful, took me into the building, said, look, you need some of this tape. What you do this. And if only we could pry the door open a little bit. So he gave me some wood wedges and I fiddled around there. He had pressing engagements, so left me. He was very kind, very helpful. Used his security card to get me in and out of the building because, of course, mine was locked in the car with the keys and so forth.
A tale of woe, Billy.
Yes. After about an hour of fiddling around with all this thing, success.
About an hour. Took you an hour.
Yeah. I got a length of pipe and I drove it through the back window.
You serious?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
It was the only way I could open it. So these little cars I've got, the little Meals on Wheel van, are very, very... I don't think anyone will be stealing it in a hurry.
The rear window?
Yeah, the rear little triangle one.
Oh, so it's got the old weak spot, the triangle.
You can't see the blood now. It's dried up.
Automotive manufacturers went to great lengths to eliminate those little triangle windows because they were considered the weak spot for exactly that reason.
That's right. So anyway, I got into the car and was able to come here. But the magic of the whole thing, yes, I'm now up for probably, $5,000 for a little... triangle of glass.
I'm doubting whether you'll be able to find one.
I probably won't.
They're very rare.
I bet John Fain's got one in the back of his ute in Mongolia.
He probably has.
Look,
too.
Billy, Vauxhall Viva quarter windows are not easy to get.
Champion, you know I'd rather Hillman Impra. But the magic about the whole thing was the fact that for 20 minutes, Dale from Ripon Lee, who I'd never met before, went out of his way to give me a hand.
Yeah, good on him.
Could have been champions, have been broadcasting now for 28 years. And have barely drawn breath.
And the audience has been growing and growing and growing. And
in one fell swoop. We dissipated. We're streaming, folks. If you can hear us, that's because you've been able to fathom what on earth is happening on the ABC computer. If you can't hear us, well, that's because there are problems with the streaming.
But isn't that a great thing? 10 or 15 years ago, it wouldn't have been possible.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have been a stream.
Well, I remember 15 years ago when they were broadcasting rugby, we had to speak into pigeons and then let the pigeons out the window of the building and they would fly around to different people's houses.
And, of course, we mean rugby league there, of course, as opposed to rugby.
Mm. Look, we take having the internet totally for granted now in, what is it, 2009? Eight.
Sorry.
Walked into that
but
one.
You're so used to it. Can you think back to a time when, can you remember what your life was like when you didn't use it, even if it existed and other people were using it? Can you remember... Your world when you were not an internet user? You had no expectations of it?
Well, I can remember the breakthroughs that came when you learnt to use it.
And can you remember when that was?
Yes. In my case, doing football songs on Saturday morning radio for so many years and having to... And I used to go around to Wayne Duncan's house every Friday because he had the record collection with everything in it. And if I had to learn a song in order to parody it on Saturday morning, I could go to Wayne Duncan's home, which was a record museum, and get he would lend me the single, which he invariably had. Mm-hmm. I'd take it home and learn it that way. Well, of course, with the net, of course, you could research your song off the net and save everyone a lot of bother.
And was it being able to do that got you to the point where you could just sit down and use it the same way as you might walk down to the corner shop? Was it looking for songs that was the spur for you to learn how to use the internet?
The thing that was the spur for me to learn to use the net at all was getting a column on the local newspaper when we moved up the northern New South Wales.
Mm. Okay.
And you had to file by the net.
So you had
a column.
So you had to learn how to upload before you learned how to download.
Yes, you had to learn how to send it in. Mm. Ian, I got a column with the Lismore...
I thought it was one you did for the Australian.
Leader.
And you've done an ad for chickens.
Yes.
You've done it all, mate.
I've never heard that ad for chickens. I'd love to hear it. And, Ian, I got sacked from my column at the Lismore Leader.
No, you weren't sacked. They just decided not to continue with it.
No, but I maintained my column with the National Broadsheet. Yeah,
very good. How about that?
So I got the boot from the local little regional one.
Mm. But and went the national.
National Broadsheet.
So that was when you started being a netizen.
Mm.
Yes, that was the trigger to make me learn PCs.
And being plugged in and all that.
Mm.
Now you do it. Can you remember, Billy, what got you started?
Oh, it was only... I think I came to this later than all of you other blokes, and I think it was only because it was pointed out to me, and I recognised the fact that it was a powerful research tool, and when I stepped in here... Was it 5 years ago when Simon, the much-loved Simon Wheeler? We must get Simon in one night when we're streaming.
Mm, no one will hear it.
He can say whatever he likes.
Most of all, his boss.
There are some listeners who have SMS'd, sent us a text.
They text us.
And saying that they are listening.
Tremendous.
And we're doing good work. So thanks, folks, who are listening.
And look, as much as we might joke about not really listening, Billy... If we're still being monitored in one particular country, there's a chance we have got a billion listeners.
So anyway, you started having the need to research on a shorter turnaround because your commitment to the wireless was greater than it had been?
Mm, correct. And I basically had to start from scratch learning how to do it. But it's amazing. You just pick up a momentum once one thing becomes obvious. It's a very simple tool. You don't need to be
searching
a rocket surgeon to do it.
So did you start doing it in the workplace and say, right, I've now got to get this working at home?
No.
So you sort of did it in the privacy of your own home?
In the home first. Well, I was lucky that I had a housemate who was savvy.
Oh.
And had it for her.
Savvy, that's a great word, isn't it?
Mm.
Yes. Not as good as Longorius, however.
From the Latin savio, to know.
Mm. Mm. So it was very savvy and was able to instruct me.
Ah. How about you, Ian?
Oh, I think it came through work.
Mm. Mm. Can you remember
when? In the journalism business.
Can you remember when it was?
No, before journalism. Mm. I think it might have been actually during my time representing the people.
Oh.
So you had it both as a communication tool... at home and in the office.
So were you all dragged off to a training course?
There was a training course one day, yes, when we were first given all the computers in our offices.
Did you all sit up the back and giggle?
In the chook shed. Yeah, exactly. There's a building called the chook shed, and that's where we did it.
Mm. Hmm. But you were in journalism long before representing the people, and computers were around.
But the internet was
no.
There were computers and terminals and things.
Word processors, that's what they were.
But one that were all connected to each other by this this vast global interweb did not exist.
No.
You were the first, could have been, to embrace it. In fact, your knowledge and reputation in IT goes the length and breadth of the country.
Oh, throughout the education institutions of the country.
You were there when Johnny Thurman invented the interweb.
In fact, it just makes you realise, Richo, it just seems like yesterday.
Mm, that's right.
When Gough Whitlam uttered those famous words.
The fax machine was introduced to Australia And who sent the first fax?
I did.
What I want to know is,
who sent it?
And isn't... And you ask a child today about a fax machine, they wouldn't know what you're talking about. And good riddance.
Yeah. I have a friend who's slightly more senior than us here, who still insists on doing communication other than by telephone or writing in the old-fashioned way. The only technology he will, beyond those, embrace is the fax.
Mm. Well, he must be running out of people he can send things to.
Well, my sort of printer at home operates as a fax.
It'll still receive.
I've got to get print, scan, fax, all that sort of stuff. Mm. And so he quite often sends me faxes, but, you know, it takes half a dozen goes for it to come through. The usual. There's a bit missing and pages missing. And this man is also showing just how dinosauric he is.
Retro.
Yeah. Mm. There was something on a couple of years ago and people had to, get in touch with him about, you know, whether they're going to come along to the event or whatever. And so he'd been sending faxes out or dropping off letters or whatever. And I said, how's it going? How are the replies going? He said, these people, he said, they want me to do it with this email business. He said, you know, email, it'll be the ruination of all of us. It just doesn't work, you know. And so he maintains, steadfast, he sticks to faxes and letters.
So Gough was the first person to send fax. He'll be the last.
Yeah. I wonder where he gets his fax rolls from. Yeah. That'll be like a Super 8 footage. It'll dry up and be covered.
The fax, of course, has survived because documents and signatures need to be transferred, which email doesn't.
But you can do it now.
You can scan
them. A digital image is better anyway. Getting back to the versing controversy we were talking about earlier, back in the time when people used to use faxes a bit and you'd say, could you please email it or fax it, it used to always annoy me that people wrote fax. And I made a habit of, even on business correspondence or on a business card or something.
I bet I know what you did.
What do you reckon I did?
FACS, full stop.
Correct. And it used to raise a few eyebrows.
I bet it did too.
But you know what? Don't have to do it anymore because nobody cares about faxes anymore.
How pedantic. I'm surprised, really.
Well, this is shortening a facsimile. That's what it means.
You're a one who's all for getting rid of commas and grammar, etc.
For me, it's about meaning, and fax doesn't mean anything.
Mm. Well,
we know what it means.
What does it mean?
It means FACS, post dot. And you know it and I know it. And that's good enough. It speaks a common language.
What about buses then that have license to carry 48 packs?
I've never seen that.
Yes, they have. They do.
PACS.
No, PAX.
I've never seen that.
Yeah, and you get that on flight manifestos and stuff. Yeah.
Is that right?
The plane's got 202 PAX, PAX.
Yeah, really? Yeah. What's that short for? Because that's not very Latin.
Should it be PASS?
Well, it is very Latin, 48 piece.
I don't know what that can possibly be meaning.
It's bizarre.
Because PAX means peace. Yeah, exactly.
It's clearly come PAX from Verbiscum. That brief moment in history which is rapidly being forgotten when the FAX was everywhere and is now gone.
Yeah. You see that on functions and that.
Yeah.
And it'll have, you know, someone will fill in a form when they're signing up to put on a thing, Brownlow Night, MCC Dining Room, and it'll have dinner packs, PAX, 450.
I hadn't noticed, but now that I think about it, it's probably a convenient abbreviation for passengers. Well, although I don't see why it would be at a dinner function then.
Well, what's DAX short for?
A type of dog, a dachshund. It's got shortened. They should have been DACH, and they went DAX.
I thought that was DAKS.
Well, yeah,
sure. Yes, so
do you get DAX for trousers in?
Yeah, good call.
And does the bloke who make trousers, he's got a DAX machine.
I always thought it was short for whatever the German word for DAX is.
Probably. It's good an explanation as any.
You know what it is? A crazy mixed up world.
Andy has also done some research that tells us that PAX means personnel or passengers.
Okay.
But does it? I suppose when someone puts it in a sentence like maximum 48 packs, it does. But I'm reluctant to accept that it does.
That would be max packs. But look, if he's written up on the screen, it must be true. Mm. He also
said, but you don't want to say it straight away because people might think it's a setup.
That's a very good point, John. Yeah. 679 Pax is a minor planet orbiting the sun. There's another reference. And Pax is also a small town in West Virginia.
And into the search engine, could you type Pax's Dax? See what you come up with?
Greg, you're the Latin scholar, P-A-X. Mm-hmm. Now, when if Julius Caesar walked into the forum and said, "Hi, everybody, Pax." Mm. What would he have meant?
He meant
peace.
He
was a hippie.
He'd walk in and say,
"So he's given the peace sign. He's on Pax."
Oh, you see the way he was dressed.
He's walked in and said, "Pax has broken out.
Pax man
with Greece."
So that may have then led to the expression that a peace pact.
Mm. Oh, yeah, pact. That's what pact is from the Latin.
Is it from pactus?
From Pax, actually.
And there one day, you go. Who would have thought?
And one day,
those Romans.
One day some young kids will get a hold of it and just massacre it.
Pacify.
Well, we haven't paxed them yet.
Some older kids have obviously already got hold of it and massacred it into passengers.
Mm-hmm. The word pacify, etc., all comes from the derivative.
You could turn this segment, Greg, where we normally have guitar for you at home, into Latin for you at home.
Good idea.
Yes, why don't we have a weekly lyceum?
Mm. Just give us a Latin word a week.
Mm. There were five...
with Pope Gregory.
Five declensions, I think, in Latin, Jeff. Pardon? If you know what a declension is.
Sleepy, sneezy.
Huey, Dewey and Louie.
And Zeppo.
Having seen you pick your guitar up does remind me I could have done this as a magic during the course of the week. I went to a school production or a school music night where all the kids did group numbers, ensemble numbers and all, and it was quite interesting to have, the senior school rock band knocking out a song by one of these current Red Hot Chili Pepper bands and then followed by a girl playing the cello. I have to say it was... Then you had a saxophone quartet.
Oh, that's
somewhat
nice.
Eclectic.
Yeah. It was. The highlight for me on the night, actually, or one of the highlights, the audience certainly, there's a boy at the school who's an exchange or a student. He's been at the school for 6 months. Mm. He's from France.
Mm.
I would have said France, but I'm talking to you, Greg.
France.
Anyways, so this band did a song and he played the drums and then they did a second song and he came out from behind the drums and he did lead vocals.
Wow.
And sang in French.
Oh, nice.
Mm.
Ça plan pour moi.
Pretty much. Jinx. Yeah. And no one in the audience had any idea what he was singing, but gee, it was good.
And did you know the tune he was singing?
No, it was a bit sour playing Paul Martin.
See, music is the international language.
Yeah, but I'd like to know what he was singing. He could have been saying, "I hate this school, I've been here 6 months, you can all jump off the roof."
Was it Muck Up Day, was it?
That had been earlier in the week.
Mm.
I saw Muck Up Day in action when I went past that school.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they did it very well. They had a jumping castle. On the oval. Yeah.
For the year 12s?
Correct.
You're kidding.
I went past, they had a jumping castle, and then I went back a little bit later, and they were having a tug-o-war.
Oh, I think you'll find they had a jumping castle.
Sorry. And they had a tug-o-war.
They didn't have muck-up day when we matriculated.
No.
On our last day of school, we went around and wished all the students good luck.
For the best for their future.
Their scholastic careers.
Mm. They had good riddance day when we left school, didn't they?
Can we just take a call, even though we're streaming? I think we must honour those who ring. It might be someone with a request, Covey, or Champy, or someone who's... complaining. Let's find out. Hello. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Billy.
Oh, is that Stan?
It's Stan here, Billy.
G'day, Stan.
Hello, Coolabin.
Yes, Stan.
Hello, Stan.
Just enjoying Greg's work.
Oh, yes, Stan. That's nice.
And he's been, you have been throwing song titles at him.
Yeah.
And he's been sort of fudging
on
whether he'll do them or not.
Mm-hmm.
And he played a very nice song there.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, I know Greg likes compiling lists.
Yes.
Yeah, he does.
And as you know, I'm I enjoy facts and figures.
You do.
My friends call me Stan the Statistician from Stradbroke Island. That's where I'm calling from.
Yes.
And I just thought, Greg, I've got a top 10 for you.
Oh, have you?
And if you wrote this down...
All right.
This could actually comprise...
Yes.
10 songs for you to perform.
Well, Stan, fire away. I'm all ears.
Would you like them from 1 to 10 or 10 to 1?
Whichever way suits you, Stenny.
Well, let's start with number one.
Yeah.
And you'll note, as I do enjoy facts and figures, and I've got a number into each one.
Oh, okay. Songs about numbers?
Well, here we go.
Okay.
One.
Is the loneliest number?
Two little boys.
Yes.
three times a lady. I think you'd be very nice doing that, Greg. You're once, twice, three times a lady.
Well, you've got a lovely voice yourself, Stan.
Stan, that's not quite right. It's not lady. It's that other little-known word, L-A-D-U-H.
Later.
Later.
Three times a lady.
Four.
He's a jolly good fellow.
Five.
I'm doing gags now. Five.
Yes.
Working 9 to 5. What a way to earn a living.
Right.
That's got five in it.
Yes, it has. Six.
And drugs and rock and roll. or we could do sing a song of sixpence.
Right.
You could do that for the kiddies.
But it's nice if it starts with six, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, or 25 or 6 to 4.
Yeah.
Or even better,
yeah.
Here's one I can imagine you doing in your days with your pop rock group.
Yeah.
Pennsylvania 65,000.
Yes, that rings a vague bell. What about seven, Stan?
Spanish Angels.
I was going to go there if you didn't.
That's a lovely song, Greg.
Yes, it's a Willie Nelson had a crack at that one, didn't he? It's country, so it's got to be good, Stan.
He'd like that.
Eight. Yeah.
Days a week.
8 days a week, yeah. Nice.
Love Potion number.
Nine.
Yeah.
Thank you.
If you've got a song that starts with nine, just out of interest, like...
Well, the Beatles had an extended dance mix of 8 days a week. It was called 9 days a week.
Fine.
Well, while you're there with the Beatles, Revolution number 9.
Yeah.
Oh, that's... I'll write that just a moment. Revolution number 9. Thank you, Jeff.
Ten.
Well, I'm struggling for 10. Well, I got one here.
Yes.
10-pound toothbrush.
Oh, I've got it. I can see your 10-pound toothbrush and raise you a 10 green bottles.
Yes. That was the one just waiting to drop
that
off,
wasn't
it?
That could go on for some time.
It could.
I think that might have been sung by the chap that walked off into the night down in the Antarctic.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now, the 12 days of Christmas is just waiting there for us, but we can't get there until we get past 11.
No, but I said only do... I'm following your lead, Greg, of just doing top 10.
Yeah.
Do you like that?
Yes, well, you could... I'm sure you could probably go right on with the business.
Anyway, so... And, of course, there are other songs that have more than one number in them, such as 1, 2, 3, 4, Red Light.
Yes.
It's just 1, 2, 3, Red Light, there.
Oh, sorry, I was trying to get a 4 in there. And there was, I was thinking of the song by Daryl Cotton and the Zoot Pop Group Band. They had a song called... 1 times, 2 times, 3 times, 4.
They did too.
And then, of course, there was 8675309.
Jenny.
Yeah, Jenny.
And was there a chappy called Paul someone who had a song and it had lots of numbers in it?
Well, Paul.
Was it Paul Young?
Paul Young had Wherever I Lay My Hat.
Yeah, but didn't he have a song with some of the Q-tips, Billy? You once told me you had a record of theirs. And
yes, there was something. It's eluded me now.
It's like a phone number.
That's right.
Yes, of course.
785692 or something.
That's right.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's Mastercraft Butchers.
You are a good singer.
You're not thinking of the 1422 Franklin Pike Circle hero.
Oh, I'll put that one down as well.
And you also went past 25 or 6 to 4 with lots of numbers.
It,
yeah. Yeah, no, I'm saying you've already mentioned that with lots of numbers.
Anyway, so I just saw there's a nice little list of songs that you could perhaps do one night on the program, or you could do them one a week for 10 weeks.
Or
you could do them one per streaming broadcast, and
Jeez,
I'd
Stan.
Hear it.
You are full of ideas, Stan.
It'd be digital.
Oh.
Gee.
I don't know whether we allow digital in the world of statistics.
Well, and we haven't even started on the catalogue of Kraftwerk.
Hang on, my other phone's just going. And I have my own producer here at home.
Yes?
Yes, his name's Old Andy.
Yes.
He's just handed me a bit of paper that says Bob Dylan from a Brick 6.
Oh, Buick 6. From a Buick 6.
You'll have to improve your handwriting. Sorry, I just had to admonish the old man.
Positively 4th Street.
Okay.
Old man Andy.
115th Street.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's got you going now.
Rainy
good
day
understand.
Women.
Amazing program.
Thanks, Stan.
Well, the other chap should ring in one day. I've heard him ring your program.
Who's that?
Oh, he's a chap that worked in the radio business. He was an announcer.
Oh, that's BJ the DJ.
I'm sure he's back announced some of these songs in his career.
I bet he has also.
You might hear from him.
Mm.
Perhaps not tonight.
Good on you, Stan.
Good night, Stan. Can we just interrupt James? Mm. James can take us up to the clock. Yes, there's another caller. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Willie. Good evening. Good evening.
BJ.
You're all mate, Bart. How are you, Joe? And some friends, of course, call me BJ, the
DJ. Were you streaming? And heard
I was streaming. I heard the old mate Stan there just talking about that fellow that used to work in the radio industry. He might just call in, and I couldn't resist the opportunity to come and have a little chat to your producer, young Andy. And I tell you what, got a bright future in the industry too. Great to talk to him. I think all the great programs have great producers behind them, and what an outstanding job he's doing there. To answer the phone, he said, "Good evening, Cutter Beans." Well, that's a good start. He knows the name of the program he's working on. Tremendous work. So how are you, boys?
Yeah, good, BJ. Lovely. Better for hearing you.
Yes. Yeah, loving your work too, Greg. I thought, gee, it'd be fantastic being there tonight, just being able to back announce those songs. So, Greg Champion there, a little one from Billy Nelson called Crazy.
I think it's Willie Nelson, not Billy.
No. What do you said, Billy Nelson? That's
yeah, but
go
you don't give it away straight away, or the audience thinks it's a setup, don't they, BJ?
That's right. Hey, the all-time great master told me that himself one time when I just happened to pop into the 2UE studios there out in North Sydney.
Perhaps you could...
Jack.
Maybe you could intro. Champs is just about to do a song by...
How are you, Greg?
James Taylor.
Great, BJ.
Do a Jimmy Taylor number.
Would you like to... introduce the number that he's going to do, BJ?
What's the particular number you're going to be doing for us, Greg?
I haven't worked it out yet.
Is this the one he does where they're loading out the trucks and everything and the band says...
Well, that's Jackson Brown.
Your big ding-dong.
Know your product, BJ.
Actually, it's called...
Oh, my gosh, I've spun so many in at so many midnight to dawn shifts right around this great country of ours. They all start to blur after a while when you've done mid-dawn for so long.
Well, look, BJ, I've thought of one.
Yeah, what's that?
Sweet Baby James.
A Sweet Baby James.
Yes, mate.
Yeah. Hey.
Now you're talking.
I've spun that in a few times too. Especially when you do those little love songs and dedication type programs, you know?
Yeah.
You get somewhere.
Would you
a young lady would ring you out about midnight, you say, hey, my boyfriend's out there driving a truck tonight. He'd be banging down the Newell in his great thumping Kenworth. Mm-hmm. How about his. And I'd say, what's his name, darling? And she'd say, James. I said, why don't we play Sweet Baby James for him? She said, that's what I was going to do. I hit it off with listeners like that all the time.
BJ, have you had occasion to say, this one's going out to all the leaders?
Oh, hey. I've heard that fellow there, that Gary Richardson chap you got there working with you.
Yeah.
He always goes on about the leaders.
Yeah.
He thought that was invented by Isaac Hayes, one of those chaps.
Yeah.
Can I tell you?
Yeah.
They took that off me.
I have heard
the term leader. Okay, are you ready to? Are you playing this Sweet Baby James on behalf of any particular leader? Am I listening, Greg?
Yes. She's in Denmark.
Is she?
Yes.
Princess Mary.
What's her name? Is it Mary? Yeah, good one. Saw that coming, Jeff.
It's not
work.
It's
you
not
haven't lost it. Hey?
It's an Aussie in Denmark.
Yeah, okay. Mary, we know that.
Yeah, okay.
She's a little Tasmanian tiger she's got over there. Bennett down with
Prince Henry. BJ, if you stay on a lot longer, we're coming up with the news, you'll be able to talk us right up to the clock and maybe introduce the news.
I'll leave that professor. I'll leave Megan to do that. I love her work too, Megan. Great to hear her coming through on the airwaves. Oh, through my computer anyway.
All right, PJ.
Could you dedicate this one?
To you guys. Hey, your old mate Bartholomew Jansen, otherwise known as BJ the DJ. Great to join you. The Could Have Been Champs on ABC Local Radio right around Australia and streaming on the World Wide Web thingy. Here's Greg Champion with a long-distance dedication all over Denmark to Princess Mary. It's called Sweet Baby James.
Whoops.
That was a good start.
BJ. Actually, this goes to Angela. There's a young cowboy who lives on the range.
Good on you, young Andy, through the double glass. Good night, Megan, as well. Good night, Ian Cover.
Good night, Australia.
Good night, Jeff Richardson.
Good night to you, and thanks for listening.
Good night, Greg Champion.
See you later, everybody.
We look forward to your company next weekend. Don't forget the Saturday soiree, Eastern Time, 7 till 10. Check your local guides. And have a great week. I mean that.